the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. In Boston, it's a holiday tree, but a Christmas parade. Merchandisers and department stores, shopping malls all over America are making decisions about what to put up as the holiday message. Is it Happy Holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah? You know, this is now a very controversial issue in our cultural terrain, and we're going to be talking about it today. Here's the big issue. Is there a war on Christmas? Or are Christians just too thin-skinned? Or are we just taking offense where no offense should be taken? I think we ought to have a good discussion about this. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK, and we'll be talking about it in just a few minutes. First, a review of some issues in the news. I want to tell you something that's not in the news in the United States, and it is to our shame. It tells you a lot about our media and the liberal bent of our newspapers and the television media. According to a report out of Oslo, the University of Oslo in Norway and the Norwegian Council for Mental Health, women who have experienced abortion often have lasting trauma. This is a very serious study about, of course, a very serious issue. The Washington Times in our country happens to be about the one American newspaper that has given this major attention. Listen to this. Guilt, distress, and mental distress among women who have experienced an abortion are far more common and long-lasting than abortion rights proponents had claimed. Researchers with the Norwegian Council for Mental Health and the University of Oslo evaluated 40 women who had experienced miscarriage and 80 women who had experienced an abortion. They were then followed for 5 years. Now, this is from the paper. Out of the entire group of women, only a dozen, one who had miscarried, the rest who had aborted, did not describe the experience of losing a baby as difficult. The researchers also reported that 7 women who had abortions dropped out of the study altogether because it was too difficult for them to answer questions about the pregnancy termination. Now, what goes on here is that these women have reported that themselves, women who had experienced an abortion, that they did not get over this experience. They suffered extreme trauma and mental distress, and they felt guilt. Now, The Telegraph, which is a London newspaper, has given this a lot of attention. And in its news story, they quoted also from the Family Planning Association. That's the pro-abortion group there in Great Britain. And this is what the spokesman for the FPA said. Quote, there's no evidence to suggest that abortion directly causes psychological trauma. Women can experience mixed feelings after an abortion, such as relief or sadness. These are natural reactions, and few women experience long-term problems. End quote. Now, what makes this really significant is that the editors of The Telegraph, that's one of the nation's major newspapers in Great Britain, simply decided that that was not honest. And so I want to say hats off to the editors of The Telegraph for dealing with this. This is what they said. The politicization of the debate means that it is usually only unfashionable pro-life activists who point out abortion's psychological dangers, and they are rarely given a proper hearing. Meanwhile, the Family Planning Association continues to insist that there is no evidence to suggest that abortion directly causes psychological trauma. The Oslo research exposes the absolute fatuity of that last claim. Abortion, like miscarriage, involves the loss of a baby. Unlike miscarriage, the loss is the result of a conscious decision. And the operation itself is a gruesome one. No wonder that a fifth of women continue to feel depression, shame, or guilt. End quote. Now, just imagine if a major American newspaper editorialized like that. But when we see honesty and this kind of journalistic integrity from any source, we need to recognize it. And so I really want to say a word of appreciation to the editors of The Telegraph in London for being so very honest. What about surrogate motherhood? You know, we're in this brave new world of reproductive technologies. And do you remember back when the Supreme Court of California made a ruling on same-sex marriage? And do you remember that one of the issues that was argued there is that that marriage really doesn't have anything to do with procreation? Because after all, well, all couples can procreate one way or another. Well, of course, what that requires is a redefinition, let's just say, of procreation. And this redefinition, I mean, after all, if you take two gay men, two homosexual men, there is no way they're going to have a baby. And it has to be some external agent. And in this case, it is a surrogate mother in many cases. Lisa Baker, writing in Sunday's edition of the New York Times, describes her own experience as a surrogate mother. And this tells us a lot about what's really going on here. Her self-portrait as a surrogate should serve as a warning of what happens when reproduction is severed from marriage and the procreative bond. She says she decided to become a surrogate mother because she wanted to help people and because of her, quote, leftover reproductive capacity. Eventually, she ended up deciding to work with homosexual male couples. And this is what she said. At my university and through the Unitarian Universalist Church, I was becoming friends with many gay couples. It occurred to me that I could make my offer stop one further by extending it to a gay male couple who wanted to have children. I would be providing an egg as well as a uterus. But I could do that, couldn't I? Well, evidently she could, because she did. She said the process was not unlike online dating, but instead of selling yourself, you're selling your genes and your fertility. Details like SAT scores, Ivy League degrees, and physical health and appearance get more prominent play. I'm not going to read the next part. In my ad, I said I was specifically seeking a gay couple, and within days, I got a promising response from California. Now, here's the obvious question. What kind of person would do this? You know what kind of psychological profile would produce this kind of behavior? She said this about the baby being born. Let me tell you about the couple. She said this. These guys have been together for 10 years. One was in entertainment, the other a nurse. They explained that they had investigated adoption but found it difficult for gay men. They had been at this for a while and already had screened many potential surrogates. Skip forward to when the baby's born. She said, I hadn't expected it to be so hard, which made me feel stupid. Why wouldn't it be hard for a mother to give up a baby she had carried, a baby that was part her? Even though I knew she wasn't mine, she had never been mine, she and I were one organism. Despite all my mental preparation, I felt as if she had been ripped out of my body, ripped out of my arms. End quote. Now, this is a heart-wrenching article. And here's the angle on this that I find so troubling. She is writing this article, and the New York Times editors decided that it ought to be published in order to celebrate the very thing that brought her so much pain and to talk about the fact that even in the end, she's glad she did it. But, you know, this is where, you know, just God's common revelation, general revelation, the common knowledge that has been implanted within the human conscience comes out. And it comes out in her statement about her sense of loss as the baby was taken away from her. That's because it is not right. It is not natural. It is not normal for one to give birth in a situation like this as basically a baby-making factory. The artificiality of this, the fact that it is stripped out of the institution of marriage, and the fact that it is for the purpose of doing what nature was not designed to do by its creator. Now, here's the problem. But it's not a problem to the New York Times that evidently saw this as a piece that ought to see the light of day. And it's not a problem to a lot of people who would see this and say, well, you know, this is another demonstration of altruism. She was just doing this to help people. And she did have this leftover reproductive capacity, whatever that means. You know, there are a lot of folks who think that slavery is simply a matter of the past. Uriah Kriegel, who teaches philosophy at the University of Arizona, reports that slavery is alive and flourishing in some regions of the world. Quote, not many Americans know it, he says, but December the 2nd was International Abolition of Slavery Day. Well, the institution of slavery abolished 150 years ago in most of the Western world is alive and well in some of what he calls the shadowy parts of the world, and he draws particular attention to the Sudan. I'm reading from his report. One place where slavery still flourishes is the Sudan, which is one of the most wretched corners of the earth. Sudan is mired in problems, a ruthless civil war, intense religious, ethnic, and gender oppression, and most remarkably, rampant and well-established slavery. At present, there appear to be no less than 100,000 slaves in the Sudan. Muslim tribes from the north raid pagan and Christian villages in southern Sudan routinely with the express purpose of kidnapping children for enslavement. Now, here's the big question. Why is there no public outcry? What about all these NGOs, non-governmental organizations? What about the United Nations? Professor Kriegel says this, one of the main reasons our awareness of modern slavery remains so meager is that the flagship human rights organizations seem completely uninterested in the phenomenon. This is primarily, he says, because the perpetrators do not represent the kind of highly visible figures NGOs are eager to confront. Most human rights groups are driven today by a single superficial principle, oppose the powerful and back the weak, no matter what the powerful stand for or what the weak stand for. He goes after, in particular, Amnesty International, saying it gives all its attention to governments and even to Western democratic governments, but is strangely silent and politically ineffective on the issue of slavery. Now, you know, we as Christians need to be particularly attentive wherever this kind of oppression is found. And you're talking about here the gross and awful evil of slavery showing its head once again, 150 years after the international slave trade was abolished, and well over 150 years since it was ended in the United States as well. That's what we're aiming for. Almost 150 years, and here it comes back. We're going to talk about Christmas. Are we thin-skinned, or is there a war on Christmas? We'll be right back. Not exactly the way you may have heard it in church. That's O Come All Ye Faithful by Trans-Siberian Orchestra. It's their album Christmas Eve and Other Stories. You know, it's interesting how a lot of this music takes on a new life and a new age with even new instruments and all the rest. But there is one issue that's back. I can remember when I was a little kid, and we were driving along, and it was the Christmas season, and I started noticing Xmas signs. And, you know, the first thing I was told is, well, that's just an effort to take Christ out of Christmas. And, you know, it was later when I actually was taking Greek, I discovered that's the way we use the shorthand for Christmas, with the chi as the representing Christ. It was kind of a shorthand. But let's face it, Xmas, it isn't saying Christmas. I mean, not in the culture where people aren't walking around with the Greek alphabet on their minds. There's something going on there. But we've come a long way in 40 years since. I mean, we're now looking at a situation in which it's a white heart controversy. You can just turn on the television. You can look at the newspapers, especially the cable news shows. There's just a lot of debate about this. John Gibson of Fox News has written a book entitled The War on Christmas, subtitled How the Liberal Plot to Ban the Sacred Christian Holiday is Worse Than You Think. And there have been controversies about Walmart, Target, you know, many different stores and department stores and malls and all where this is being debated. And I have seen prominent Christian spokesmen out there arguing. Now, last year on this program, we did what we called the Scrooge Watch. And we were taking some very specific cases in which there was a clear anti-Christian bias, anti-Christmas bias, and we were giving that some attention. We're not doing that this year, partly because of the shape this controversy has taken. There are those on the other side who say, look, there's no war on Christmas. So we're just talking about Christians who are too thin-skinned, who demand to see Christianity affirmed everywhere. When some people say happy holidays, these folks say they're not trying to avoid saying Merry Christmas. They're just recognizing we're in a diverse, pluralistic society in which there could be persons who would be Jews and not celebrating Christmas, or now, of course, Buddhists or Hindus or Muslims or whatever. And now we have Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa, you know, the made up African American holiday, and I have nothing against Kwanzaa if that's what people want to do, but are we now in the situation in which we just kind of have a winter festival, and we just kind of say, you know, we're going to celebrate the snowflake? Now, let me give you my bottom line on this, and I want you to call, and I want to know what you think about this, because the question is there really a war on Christmas, or are we just getting too thin-skinned? And I'm going to answer the question by saying yes. Yes to both. There is a war on Christmas. I believe that. I think you can look at many of these examples where political correctness has simply come in. And on the one hand, you have those that are just trying to deny that there is a Christian basis to the holiday. Their opposition is to the Christ child. Their opposition is to the truth claim that is inherent even when you say Christmas. And what these secularists fear and oppose is the very affirmation of the importance of the birth of Christ in such a major cultural event as the Christmas holiday. So whenever I see that there's a secularist going at Christmas, then I'm going to stand up for Christmas. And wherever I see there's an employee in a store being told you can't say Merry Christmas, even if you know you're saying Merry Christmas to someone who would appreciate Merry Christmas, then I'm going to be there to defend that employee. Whenever I see a Christmas tree redefined as a holiday tree, well, my blood pressure goes up because it's not a holiday tree. It is a Christmas tree. But when I see Happy Holidays at the mall, that doesn't bother me so much. It does bother me. My wife Mary and I were talking about this with another couple at lunch today. It does bother me when Christians say to other Christians Happy Holiday, or when they send Christmas cards that say Happy Holiday, as if it's a way of avoiding saying Merry Christmas. But, you know, what do we expect lost people to do? You know, what do we expect lost people to know? I think there is the danger that if we press this agenda too hard, and if we press it in the wrong way, we can look like, well, we're really just one special interest group among other special interest groups just out to make sure that we get our slice of the pie and the cultural attention. Difficult balance to maintain here. I want to know what you think about it. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I began by speaking about the city of Boston. And in Boston, the issue of whether it's a holiday tree or a Christmas tree is a controversy. The mayor says it ought to be a Christmas tree, and he refers to the parade as a Christmas parade. But the city government has declared that the tree is not a Christmas tree. It's a holiday tree. Well, of course, I want to come back and say, what holiday? Do we now just have kind of a generic holiday tree? If it's just a generic holiday tree, then why don't you put it up in May? You know, this is really just trying to deny the obvious. The phone number, 877-893-8255. We're going to go to Cleveland, Ohio, where Dave's on the line, listening on WHKW. Dave, it's your turn.
Hi, Dr. Mullen. As I was telling your call screener, I think that you're right that, you know, in both cases there are maybe some Christians that are too thin-skinned. But I also think that that there are efforts out there, you know, the ACLU and et cetera, who are trying to deny Christmas or Christianity, or to put it in the background. But one thing I think too is, even if a lot of these people who are saying Happy Holidays or what have you are not doing it intentionally as an anti-Christian or anti-Christmas thing, I had heard once when I was young, and I'll never forget, that the devil really doesn't have to get us to be against God. He just has to get us to not think about God, and then he's done his job. And I think that, in a way, anything like this that happens is kind of taking God out of it, and just we're drifting a little farther along to the point where we are, you know, not going to be thinking about God anymore.
Yeah, Dave, if you read John Gibson's book, The War on Christmas, you'll find your argument just sustained and buttressed with evidence and given the background of all the illustrations and anecdotes that would just make your blood boil, literally, because this is going on. There is a secularist agenda, and those who deny it just aren't being intellectually honest. I mean, the ACLU, People for the American Way, Americans United, these groups are out there just to make sure that there's not a courthouse in America that, if it has a nativity scene, which they wouldn't want in the first place, doesn't have it accompanied by reindeer and Frosty the Snowman and all the rest, just to make clear this isn't about Christ. But, you know, on the other hand, I'm just afraid, I want to be honest about this, I'm just afraid that if we fight not only the legal battles, which I think we must fight, but if we start writing nasty letters to department stores and all the rest just because, you know, they don't communicate this the way we want them to communicate it, I wonder if that's the most effective witness for Christ. You know, I guess that's the thing. I fear Christians with an angry face claiming that this is about our rights, when it's not about the courthouse square, and it's not about what's happening in church, it's not about our right to declare the gospel, but it's about what others should say about Christmas. I guess that's where I'm seeing some danger signs on our side. You know, I really don't expect America's retailers to be evangelists. I guess that's the bottom line. I really don't expect that's going to be what's going to happen. That has to be the calmest music going into a break here we have ever had. Folks, what we're talking about here is a controversy that is live and active. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I want to know what you think. Are we just too thin-skinned about this, or is there a live war on Christmas about which we should be concerned? Again, the phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We have callers from Louisville and Tampa, Florida, and elsewhere. This is the opportunity for you to call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back, folks. A lively debate over Christmas. Is there war on Christmas? Are we just getting thin-skinned, or is there a little bit of both in all this? Jeff Jacoby of the Boston Globe is himself Jewish, and he writes in defense of Christmas in his column recently published about the issue, and he points again to Boston. That's his home city, where a 48-foot white spruce installed on Boston Common is being referred to by the city government as a holiday tree. The mayor insists it's a Christmas tree. The mayor's spokeswoman said it's a Christmas tree. It's definitely a Christmas tree. But on the mayor's own website, it's not a Christmas tree. Fox News Channel made a big deal out of this. After all, John Gibson, who wrote the book The War on Christmas, is a Fox anchor. And they really raised the stakes in all this being a war on Christmas. And then, the blogosphere kicked in, noting that on Fox, their frames going in and out of news segments said Happy Holidays, not Merry Christmas. And, Bill O'Reilly of the O'Reilly Factor jumped on this. And then it turned out that on his own website, they were selling holiday gifts, not Christmas gifts. It's hard to track all this down, folks, and it's very easy, I think, to overstate the issue on the one hand or on the other. I want to go back to Jeff Jacoby for a moment. He comes back and he says there is a secularizing tendency in this country. And he talks about the New York City policy that prohibited the display of Christian nativity scenes on public school grounds while allowing menorahs. And he has credibility to say this. After all, he's a Jewish writer. And we did talk about that very thing last year. And again, I am going to say that that is a clear example of a secularist attack upon the religious liberties of Christians and upon Christmas. But I also agree with Jeff Jacoby when he says that there's probably something that is not so much just based on intolerance here and an intentional repression. It's on this twisted culture of political correctness, which is the culture of sensitivities, where people are afraid of offending someone. He says, as a Jewish person, what my friend Michael Medved says, and that is, I'm not offended when someone says to me, Merry Christmas. You don't have to be, he says, a Christian to acknowledge that this is an important time of the year. If you want to wish me to be merry, I'll be merry. He says this. Does the knowledge that scores of millions of my fellow Americans do all these things, that's about Christmas, make me feel excluded or offended? On the contrary, it makes me feel grateful to live in a land where freedom of religion shelters the Hanukkah menorah in my window, no less than the Christmas tree in my neighbor's. That freedom is a reflection of America's Judeo-Christian culture and a principal reason why, in this overwhelmingly Christian country, it isn't only Christians for whom Christmas is a season of joy. And why it isn't only Christians who should make a point of saying so. Well said. Now you get your say. The phone number 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We're going to go to Tatum, calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Tatum, it's your turn.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I was calling. I celebrate Christmas every, I've grown up celebrating Christmas, putting up the Christmas tree and whatnot. I definitely think there is an attack on the Christ of Christmas. I mean, there's an attack on Christ, everywhere you go. That's nothing new. However, my struggle is with the Christmas tree itself, and it's never really come to me except for this year. My understanding of the origins of the Christmas tree could be folly. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but if the Christmas tree is kind of like a Christianized pagan symbol from some far-off festival or the other, why not give what's worldly back to the world? I mean, why, unless I'm at fault in understanding the origins of the tree, that's my only struggle.
Yeah, Tatum, I would say that I think you should, with a good conscience, be able to have a Christmas tree. And here's the thing. Number one, if there were in our culture and in our time a reflexive understanding that the Christmas tree was pagan, in other words, if what people thought when they saw such a tree was an affirmation of paganism in any sort of any kind, then I would say, tear them down, burn them, and take them out of the house. But I don't think that's the case. And even though, this is one of those things, if you take any symbol, even the cross, you'll discover that there have been at least uses of a similar kind of design and symbol going back. Now, when it comes to a tree, almost every religion worldview has had some symbolism related to the tree. I am able to have a Christmas tree in a clear conscience because I don't think that anyone now living around us associates it with paganism. The use of the Christmas tree is really traced to Victorian Great Britain, Victorian England, and in the United States to the practice of German immigrants, especially German Lutherans. And so in this country, especially and in our time, it has an overwhelmingly, if not exclusively, Christian connotation. And so, Tatum, I would say, I would suggest that if you have pagan thoughts about it, don't have it. But I don't think you have to worry about sending a false message to your family or your neighbors. The phone number, 877-893-8255. Why do we call it a Christmas tree and not a holiday tree anyway? 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mohler Program. All right, let me just tell you again, what's my bottom line in all this? I'm less concerned with what the management of the mall thinks about Christmas as what, your children think about it in your own home. You know, it seems to me the first responsibility is that Christian homes make certain that we celebrate a Christian Christmas. And then, of course, our local churches. That's where Christmas ought to be clearly understood. And then it's a matter of witness. Yes, let's talk about it. Let's wish people a Merry Christmas. Let's talk to them about why Christmas is such a joyous occasion. But I'm just really, really allergic right now to the idea that we ought to respond with boycotts and angry letters and all the rest. It's just kind of hard to say, joy to the world! You know, I'm going to slam you for saying happy holidays. What do you think? 877-893-8255. Let's go to Joseph calling from Sumter, South Carolina, listening on XM. Go ahead, Joseph.
How you doing today?
I'm doing fine.
I wouldn't necessarily say there's as much of a war on Christmas as there is on Christianity as a whole. But my main comment is, I mean, as far as Christmas trees versus holiday trees, I don't really see where a tree has anything to do with Christ in the first place. And so in my home, we don't put up a tree because I don't need a tree in order to be able to celebrate Christ's birth.
Well, that's good for you and your family, Joseph. But, I mean, just help me to understand, you're against all Christmas decorations then?
Right.
Okay. Well, that means you certainly don't have to explain anything about what you got hanging. Okay, that's great, Joseph. Thanks for your call. That's a legitimate option. I don't think it's a necessary option, but it's a legitimate option. We've got garlands hanging all over the house, Christmas bows. We've got pine cones. We've got cranberries. We've got candles, and we've got a Christmas tree. And actually, we've got more than one. And it's actually a lot more than one because we do so much entertaining over Christmas. And this one's really, really big. And at least people know that we're serious about this thing. All right, let's go to Susan calling from Salem, Oregon, listening on XM. Susan, your turn.
Yes, from Salem, Ohio. Okay, well, Dr. Mohler, I just wanted to say that I think that we have so commercialized Christmas, Christians and non-Christians alike, have turned it into this big monstrous commercial thing, and maybe we should take Christmas back and let it be a strictly Christian holiday. If they don't want to celebrate it in the right spirit, let them leave it alone. And let it be ours, and let it be those who are actually celebrating the birth of Christ, and it can belong to
us.
Yeah.
All right, Susan, let me ask you. I'm sorry to have moved you to Oregon there, but, there in Ohio, listen, I mean, are you saying that you're really kind of offended by the way that the business world seems to take advantage of the holiday as a great opportunity for commercialization?
They do. They do take advantage of it. And a lot of people completely lose sight of what it's about in the process.
Yeah, I think that's true for all of us as Christians. Even we can get sucked into the vortex of this commercialization. And, you know, we talk about this. Let's keep Christ in Christmas. Let's keep the priorities straight. But, I guess one of my pastoral instincts in this is that this is where the church has to keep its wits about itself in the midst of this and help families to say, look, you don't have to buy everything. You don't have to do all this thing. There's nothing wrong with giving gifts. But let's just remember that Jesus did not come so that we can have many wrapped presents, but that we may have everlasting life. All right, let's go to Laura calling from Youngstown, Ohio, listening to WHKW. Laura, your turn.
Hi, yes. Actually, this subject upsets me pretty much. I thought that Christmas was about Jesus' birth, and I thought our country was founded on the Bible and the scriptures, And Christmas has been around for I don't know how many ages now. So what's going on in this last year? All of a sudden, I mean, I didn't hear about this last year. You know, what's going on this year that all of a sudden, you know, it's holiday and you hear all this stuff? I mean, I have boycotted Walmart, and I feel like putting a sign on my back and walking through there with the sign saying Merry Christmas and God bless you, just because I am just very annoyed by all of this. And I did hear that 84% of Americans celebrate Christmas and 14% of Americans do not. Well, why are we catering to the 14% and not caring about the 84%?
Well, I do think we're in this age of hypersensitivity, Laura, and this this culture of political correctness that says you can't risk offending anyone. And let's face it, you know, that's impossible. And, you know, that's why, again, if you ask the question, is there a war on Christmas or are we getting too thin-skinned? I think there's a bit of both, but I would not deny there is a war on Christmas. There is a secularizing pressure in this country that seeks to marginalize any explicit witness to Jesus Christ, even symbolism. And I think we have to call that for what it is. You know, just, by the way, I don't think this is something that just came up this year. I'll tell you what, I think people have just written some books and some articles the media is giving attention to, because I can remember as a kid hearing this debate. I can remember, well, first of all, most of these big court decisions having to do with nativity scenes and all the rest, you're talking about 25 years of big court precedents. So this has been fought out before. I just don't think it had the kind of attention, and certainly not the boycotts of people. You know, Andrew Cohen of the New York Times says he's a little confused. And, you know, I don't agree with him, but I do think he has a point. He says, I'm a little confused. Christians used to complain about the commercialization of Christmas. Now they seem to be complaining that it's not commercial enough. And what he meant by that was, why do Christians care what Walmart or Target or anyone else says in their advertisements? I think his point's overmade. But I do think we have to be really careful to say that the main Christian concern is not that stores advertise Merry Christmas, but that the church talk about Christ. I think that's the most important thing, and that we give a winsome, convictional, and very explicit witness to Jesus Christ. Let's go to Tony calling from Tampa. Go ahead, Tony.
Yes, I do understand why the message is going out to boycott stores that refrain from saying Merry Christmas. And I think one of the main things about it is just the commercial atmosphere is one of the places where they communicate so much through advertisements, through the stores themselves. And the word boycott is a strong word, but it does send a strong message that brings attention to the issue that needs to be brought.
Yeah, you know, interesting thing here, Tony. This is where secularists fall all over themselves. They stumble over their own feet. We had a caller that couldn't stay with us who wanted to make the point that even using the word holiday is an accidental witness, because after all, that comes from holy day. It's not like holiday is some secular word. You can try to secularize it, but it points back to its roots. And look, you can deny Christmas, but the minute you put up a Christmas tree with a star on the top, I mean, who's fooling whom? You know, that is not a secular symbol, and there's no way you can claim that it is. You know, by the way, what about music? I was in a store the other day that said Happy Holidays as I walked in, and the instrumental Christmas carols were going on that, if you knew the words, are clearly testifying of Christ. You know, it kind of reminds me of the old slogan, you can run, but you can't hide. And when it comes to Christmas, it's true. The vast majority of Americans understand what it's all about. Whether they are believing, confessing Christians or not, they understand it's about the birth of Christ. And they understand that that is the origin of the celebration and of the holiday. And I think the church needs to bear witness to that winsomely and clearly and effectively. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Well, what is it, a war on Christmas or hypersensitive Christians? Well, maybe a little bit of both, but I do think the war on Christmas is the catalyst that starts all this, the secularist assault, which is just undeniable. We could just line up atrocities here, and I did not want to do that today. I didn't want to just line up all of these attacks on Christmas and just start knocking them down, but rather I want us to talk about how we should think about the whole big question. And we had a good start on this conversation, and we're likely to pick this up again before Christmas comes. We got time for one last call. We're going to go to Tarpon Springs, Florida, on WTBN, where Marilla's listening. Marilla, go right ahead.
Yes, my opinion is that us Christians need to stand together, and we need to be the one to put Jesus back in Christmas. You know, the holidays are great and all that, but let's put Christ back. That's the reason for the season. And if the Christians stand together and do it, we can bring it back into our worldly life again.
Now, Marilla, what do you do in your home and with your family to accomplish just what you said? I think there are a lot of Christians who say, yeah, I'm with her. What does that look like? What do you do?
You know, I put the music on of Jesus Christ, the angel, I put the manger out. You have no idea how many homes I go into, and that's what I do for a living, and you never see a manger in any of their Christmas decorations. Put Jesus out there. That's what I tell my family. Jesus is the reason for the season. Let's make it that way and keep it that way.
Marilla, thank you so much for your calls. Good to hear from you there. Tarpon Springs, Florida is an area of large Greek Orthodox influence, very large Greek community and the sponge industry there. I grew up close to that and went to Boys State with a young fellow from Tarpon Springs, learned a lot about it. Glad to get a call from that part of the country. You know, what we're talking about here with Christmas is that we bear a responsibility as Christians that needs to start local rather than in the culture at large. In other words, we need to make certain that in our homes and in our churches, we really understand what we're doing about Christmas. And then I think, yes, we need to go out in the culture with a winsome Christian witness. Where people say it's unconstitutional, then just fight back. Do it anyway. You know, get caught in the act of Christian witness. That's great. Where there is a secularist assault, for instance, in the courts about a manger scene or something like that, then we're going to have to deal with that. But when it comes to talking to the management of stores and the management of malls and others, let's be sweet, even as we're giving a Christian witness. Let's talk about why we believe that this is Christmas and needs to be spoken of as Christmas and why it's important to us. But let's not ruin our witness by the kind of attitude that makes Christians look like just one more special interest group out to get our slice of the pie and our portion of cultural attention. You know, Christ is going to reign. He'll reign through his church and through believers, and that's where people need to see that winsome witness about Christmas. We'll be back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. You get to set the agenda. Get ready with your call. I'll meet you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.